This podcast is offered by Wildflowers and Sangha. A Dharma Talk by Roshi Amy to SLR, Hollowell.
Good morning. Good afternoon. In continuing the discussion of the notions of horizontal and vertical, which came up again yesterday, someone asked Joa that question. I was reminded of several things. Something I read that had been written by the American Zen teacher Joan Halifax, who is also part of our lineage, and is someone who works a lot with, she's done a lot of research and work around accompanying people at the end of life, and accompanying people who accompany people at the end of life, and also has done a lot of work with neuroscientists, and she's a very scientific mind. And she was talking about how she had recently done a program for caregivers who are on the front line of the COVID virus. And what struck me about what she said was that the program was aiming to support caregivers so that they could maintain and cultivate a strong spine and a soft face. And this is exactly a version of the horizontal and the vertical. So the vertical is this strong spine, and the soft face is the horizontal. We need to have the strong mind, strong spine, so that we can have a soft face. And if we don't have a soft face, we will not have a strong spine. Well, in fact. And so her work with caregivers, but this applies to all of us as well, in our individual lives, and then in our relationships with others. How do we cultivate and maintain this strong spine and the soft face? And when I remembered that, then this happens often in my mind, all kinds of things start going in different directions of how that applies to different examples, different situations, the traditional teachings, weaving, because we mentioned weaving the other day. And when I thought of weaving, I remembered in one of Bernie Glassman's books, he actually talks about weaving. And he talks about the warp and the woof, which are the technical terms in English for the vertical strings, and that's the warp. And the woof is the horizontal strings, threads. And he talks of this in terms of the warp as being stationary. And for that, we need a simple plain thread that is strong without knots in it, that can withstand all the movement that will come when we introduce the woof, the horizontal threads. And the woof, the horizontal threads, they are what introduce the art, the color, the pattern in the fabric. And as I think he points out, or maybe not, but I know this, and Anna has shown this in her work too, you can put anything in that. Anything can be the woof. You can put sticks, feathers, all kinds of different fabrics, different colors. That's where the art, the soft face, the color, the difference emerges. But the two are one. The fabric would not be fabric without those two. They function absolutely together. They form the web. They're inseparable. In Zen terms, we would say the warp, you know, the lengthwise, is the absolute. It's unchanging. It doesn't move. And the woof is the relative. All different, the 10,000 things are that fabric, that crosswise fabric. It's threads that you put in to make the fabric. That's the relative. And together they form oneness. They form that piece of fabric that is whole, that is one. And we can't really sit, when you're looking at your piece of fabric, you don't separate the two. The person weaving does. They see the difference and they see how it emerges then, the pattern, the tissage, we say in French. But you just put on your shirt and you don't think about it. Or you put the sheet on your bed. Or you put on the sweater that you really like because of the pattern and the color, but you're not thinking about the woof and the warp. And then that's really a great example, the weaving, a concrete example. And it fits in with what Joan Halifax said about the spine and the soft face. The soft face changes. It responds to the situation. It responds to whatever arises. And the spine keeps it strong enough to go with the whatever arises. So I imagine being a caregiver with people who are sick with COVID is very difficult, and many different things will arise. And the soft face allows that response according to the situation to accompany the person, to administer whatever they need, whatever is called for given the situation. But the strong spine keeps the caregiver present and allows them to then respond to the situation. Another thing that came up when after yesterday's discussion about the transmission and the process, and how, and that also ties in with this vertical and horizontal. A memory came back of my own process when I was in the phase Joa is in. Everyone has their own process, so Joa won't necessarily experience it like me. At the same time, there is also the vertical and the horizontal going on for him, for all of us, all the time. But in my process, it took the form of, I had spent all my years of practice with my teacher, primarily saying yes. The greatest joy of my life was saying yes to my teacher. Whatever she said, whatever she needed, whatever the Sangha needed, I just said yes. And this was really life transforming and one of the most beautiful experiences of my life. I had never been someone who said yes like that before. But the power of my practice and the deep love I had for my teacher made that yes absolutely irresistible. Well, the yes corresponds to the soft face. And as my process with the transmission advanced, it actually was a few months before the transmission. It was during a retreat in Normandy in April, And my family was not with me. Usually my family would come on retreats. For some reason, they weren't there this time. So I had a room to my own in front of the stupa. And actually, now that I remember it, Joa and Delphine were in the room next door during this retreat. And I was working on some papers for the transmission, but I also was deep in this process. And I would, after the sitting periods and whatever else was going on, I would go in my room and I would just cry and cry and cry. And I remember Joe and Delphine were in the other room because I was afraid they could hear me crying in the room all the time. And there was no one on the other side of me. So I wasn't worried about the other side. It was just the room they were in. And my assistant, my Jisha, was Tanya. And she would come to see me. And I would just be crying. And she would be trying to, like, you know, help me and say, what's wrong? And she couldn't really understand what was going on. I was trying to explain to her. And what was going on was, it was becoming more and more strong within me that I had to say no. I had to say no to my teacher. This could not happen if I didn't say no to her. And this was just so painful. She wanted me to do it. I wanted to do it, but I still had to go every step of the way with it and experience it. And this was about the spine. This was about the spine is unmoving. And I say I had to say no to her because if I didn't say no to her, I couldn't say yes to myself. So it was really about saying yes to myself more than it was saying no to her. But since I was so used to saying yes to her, I didn't know how to say yes to myself. I was confused. Well, I made it through that. I don't know how long it took. I think it went on longer than that week, but I remember Tanya's great compassion and her presence, you know, and I think if Tanya was my assistant, I obviously was giving interviews. So I think I was keeping it together when I was with other people. You know? I was not leading the retreat. It was my teacher leading the retreat. I was just, you know, I was in the position of Joa. My teacher was leading the retreat and I was helping and giving interviews and talks when she wanted me to. And going in my room and crying. So this is a powerful image too, you know, that this notion of yes and no. And yes and no become blurred in a sense because they are one. Like I said, I had to say yes to myself and I was experiencing that as saying no to my teacher. But in fact, I was saying yes to my teacher too. I was saying yes to everything. I had to say yes to no in order to say yes to everything. And then later I developed the practice that I call yes meditation, which some of you have heard. But, now we can also see the vertical and the horizontal in terms of the vertical, I maybe said this the other day, the vertical connects the earth and the sky, it connects us to the sky, and the horizontal connects us to one another. So that is where love is, the horizontal. There cannot be in the vertical, the vertical is unmoving. It does not have a soft face. It's a spine. We need it. The spine holds it all together. But the vertical is what connects us all together. All of these individual spines are connected by the horizontal. And are also what give color and texture and depth and emotion to life. Without the horizontal, there is no color, there is no action. I suppose we could you know, hear myself saying action, I suppose we could, you know, we could look at language even in terms of the woof and the warp. I think there have been people who have done that, done studies of language and said, you know, in terms of nouns and verbs, and verbs are the action that would be the horizontal and nouns would be the spine or something. We can see the vertical as wisdom and the horizontal as compassion or love. Again, though, when we do these dualities, we forget that they aren't separate. So there is no wisdom without compassion, and there's no compassion without wisdom. In a piece of fabric, there is no, if there's only a warp, there's no fabric. It's just some strings hanging there. Now maybe, you know, people whose art is weaving, like Anna, you know, they could probably push the deconstruction to a point where one thread is a piece of is a weaving. I don't know. What is in between is also important. It's like, you know, in music, the silence is important. Silence is part of the warp, we could say. It's part of what it's another aspect of the horizontal. So these are things that came up for me, and in our practice is actually to realize the two and to manifest them in our lives. So to realize the spine and the soft face, and then manifest it, actualize it in our lives and in our interactions with others. The forms that we have are the vertical, are the spine. So we have these set times that we sit, we have a set way that we sit, we have a place we sit. Myself, some of you too, I've been experimenting with sitting in different places, changing the warp to see what happens. Or maybe it's not. Maybe the warp is just the fact of sitting, and I'm changing the woof by changing places. You know, see this in different ways. So when we have this spine of a strong practice, that allows us to have the soft face of our practice in our lives. I also thought this morning about my long years of work as a journalist, in which in journalism, especially American journalism, I think in France they work kind of the same way, but they tell you, okay, you have 700 words. We want you to do an article about this subject, you know. Write about, you know, the latest statistics on the coronavirus in France. You have 700 words. And you have to give it to us by 5 o'clock, something. And then, so you have that very strict spine within which you have to work. But within that spine, you can do anything. Course, in the press, we have then other strict things. It's supposed to be simple language. We're supposed to put the maximum of the facts at the top. We're supposed to make it very clear. We're supposed to tell who, what, why, when, how. There's all kinds of style rules about how you write people's names and things. But within all of that, within that spine, you can do anything. And I, myself, because I'm actually a poet, not a journalist, well, it's hard to separate the two, actually, but I used to push the boundaries as far as I could. And so my articles were very poetic. It could be about, you know, a football match, or it could be about coronavirus, but it was very poetic because that was the weave that I gave it. That was the way that I used the language and approached it, was that way. But it was within the strong spine. And this was an incredible practice, which actually mirrors Zen practice. You give yourself this really strict spine, sitting for 40 minutes, not moving, sitting for 1 week, eating at a certain time, eating in a certain way. Often people complain to me and they say, oh, I don't like Oreoke. I don't want to eat like that, eat too fast. I'm always hungry after. Actually, the first Zen retreat I did, when I said that I had met Joanne and I were servers in Oreoke. We were both new. We didn't know what we were doing. They taught us how to serve and we did it. And as you know, the servers eat together after the meal, after everyone else has eaten. And we would be sitting there, the servers eating together, and there would be people. There was Simon Turner, who some of you know, and another guy, Claude Philippe, who always came to sit down at our table with us and see if they could get some more food, because they never got enough food during the Oreoke. Simon was a big, tall, strapping guy, and you know, never had enough to eat, no matter where you were eating. And so people would complain about Oreoke, or people complain about, I'm too tired, I can't sit in the afternoon, or I want to have coffee at a different time of day, or something. And it's really a shame to not just give what to say yes to the spine. Because it's so liberating. Not only the fact that you don't have to think about when you can have coffee and when you can't, you don't have to think about what you will have for lunch. That's liberating. But it's also liberating because within that structure, anything is possible. That structure is those horizontal threads in the weave, and then you can put anything you want in between. You can put a stick, you can put a feather, you can put red fabric, you can put many different kinds of fabric, threads, whatever. So I'm always sorry when people leave retreats early because it's too difficult or they don't like it. I understand, and I don't try to keep them from leaving, but I'm always sorry because it's a missed opportunity. So that's a lot of words. Like to hear if anything comes up for you about this or something else, other questions. Or I guess yesterday people seemed to use the chat function instead of raising the blue hand. I mean, however you want to do it. People were writing questions and Joel was reading them, but however you want to do it. So Joa is asking me, I'm rather unclear what you said no to. You mean in terms of my process of transmission? I said no to, how to phrase this? You know, I was experiencing it as saying no to my teacher, pulling away from her, no longer being at her side every moment, doing everything to support her and whatever she wanted to do, I would do it. Not spending hours and hours and hours with her. Because I, no, at that point I was no longer living in the community, but we still saw each other all the time. You know. Not turning to her, having to turn towards myself. You know, I guess, you know, I say no because I felt it, I was experiencing it as no. But it was more about separation, you know, which involves a no. You know, it's you have to separate, you have to say no. And really, though, what it was I had to say yes to myself. I had to say yes, okay, I will do this. And there was a lot of fear too, like you expressed, Joe, you know, of, I don't even so much say fear, but a burden. And can I do this? And I'm following in the footsteps of all these people that I have, you know, said yes to all the time. And now I have to say, no, it's about me. Although it's not about me. And that too is, you have to say yes to that. You have to say no to yourself in that sense. It's this constant yes and no going on. When I went to do the final transmission ceremony, I've told this before, that the final night, and we went off with Genpo Roshi and Genno Roshi and the Jishas, the assistants. And Genpo had said, looking at all of the Sangha was waiting to go sit while the ceremony was going on, and they were outside the Zendo as we left. And we walked across the courtyard, and Genpo stopped, and he said, they looked like they were going to a funeral. And everyone kind of laughed. And we kept walking a few steps, and then Genpo took my arm and he stopped and he said, but you know, it's true. Amy's not coming back. So there is that notion of saying, no, I'm not going to indulge myself anymore. I'm not going to it's not going to be about me. At the same time, it is. You have to say yes to that. And you have to say no to the teacher because you have to say yes to yourself. I'm not saying that you will experience it this way, Joa. You will have your own path with it. You will have your own things that you deal with, and your own way of doing it. And so this is not the way. I don't know if anyone else has ever talked about their transmission process like that, but it doesn't matter. I'm using it as an illustration for you of all of you, of the horizontal and the vertical that's at play in our lives all the time. Miguel's hand is raised, I think.
Good morning.
Good morning,
everyone. I'm not sure what I'm going to say, but I would say something. just because of that. The love being the horizontal, and the wisdom, the vertical. I was thinking of that just before you were saying, and this morning I was experiencing a deep a love for seeing love in everything, in every action, in everything, but at the same time a deep suffering. Because of the existence of suffering, since we are born, you know, even if everyone do this the best you can, the father, the mother, the whatever, we produce in some sense suffering. And at the same time, I see it's love. And one thing I was seeing is where this suffering that in some sense, I see that it's a dream. It's just a way of seeing, but it's capable, not now we can wake, but since we are born, it seems inescapable. And I was sensing how suffering, I see suffering, it's in horizontal line, and love goes in that direction. But this is a question. And at the same time, I wanted to say something other. That after that, we had the problem here of pumps. It's
drains.
Sewage.
And it smells bad. So we went to see what happened, me and Pedro, and we took the lid. It's although it smelled well like shit, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment. Being there with Pedro, João was dealing with the garden there, like, you know, and this full of roots of trees and mixed with these things that women put on the vagina to tampons. And all the mixed up. and Pedro clean, pushing, and I put in the bag, and all this process of it was a moment of love, just taking care of that. It was very beautiful, although at the same time very caricature, very and I don't know why I'm saying this. It's just in some sense, these two things come together, and I don't know, it's just a sharing. But at the same time, I put this this question of suffering, and maybe the shit is just the suffering, and with love, we just take care of it. And it's okay, there's no suffering, or there isn't. I don't know if you have something to say or someone about this.
Yeah, thank you, that's a beautiful story. actually, and it illustrates very well, like you say, that you it's an act of love to just respond to what arises, even if it's, you're not judging it. It's this was what needs to be done, even though you acknowledge that it smells bad, or you wouldn't normally want to be touching all of this, but you just needed, you did what needed to be done. And you need a strong spine for that, so that you can have a soft face to respond to the situation. And what motivates you to keep that strong spine is love, because as you say, you're doing it for the others. That's the work of the Bodhisattva, in fact. You are benefiting from this as well. You're doing it for the others, so that you can all live together in the place, and maybe the smell will go away. I don't know. I don't know if there's something fundamentally wrong with the plumbing, but and this too, you know, speaks of metaphorically. Yes, we could say that the shit that you describe is the equivalent of what we call suffering. But it can also be, it's what adds the spice and the color to life. It doesn't have to be smell bad. It could be beautiful smell as well. And we, you know, there's this, the expression we use sometimes, it says pain is unavoidable. You are born and the pain, there's already that pain of separation. There's the pain of breathing in your first breath. Pain is unavoidable, but suffering is not. That's what we make this distinction when we talk about suffering. Suffering is when we add pain to pain. When we deny it, or when we hang on to it, or when we enhance it. The baby's pain is not made to greater suffering by the mother's love. So that's true, that love in fact reduces the suffering. We can see this in many different ways throughout our lives, not only in a mother and a child, but when we see someone who is hurting, sometimes children, when they hurt themselves, you hear the parents say, oh, it's nothing, it's nothing. Especially in French, it's the same. C'est rien, c'est rien. It's nothing. And this instills in the child denial then of pain, rather than acknowledging it and with care and with the soft face. It doesn't mean indulging, but it means to recognize it. And this is how we always alleviate suffering, is by acknowledging the pain that we feel, and acknowledging the pain that we see in another. If we push it away, the suffering will be enhanced. If you had not taken all of the shit out of what was the pipe or whatever it was, it would have become stronger and stronger and worse, the smell. And who knows what other problems would have happened. I don't know. So we act from, that's what the whole thing of, when we say we, not knowing, bearing witness, and taking action, we let go of our ideas about the situation. We let go of, this is bad, I don't like this smell, this shouldn't have happened, who put this there? Women shouldn't put that in the toilet. Whatever the things are, the judgments you could come up with. You let go of that. You don't know. You just bear witness to what is. You can clearly see the situation. Suspend your judgments about it. And then you can respond. From a place of love.
Let's.
It's very strange. I'm hearing my
very
echo. Everyone else hearing this too?
Yes. Yeah.
Do we know why that is? Joanna seems to know why.
Yeah, it was because Pedro and Sara and Miguel were muted, but now they've muted, so it should be fine. Thank you.
Oh, I see. Okay. If there's another microphone on, it echoes. Okay. So, thank you for that example. That's a really good example. So we have time for one more question, or comment. Joanna.
Thank you. And I'm happy to see you all again. I really liked your story about saying no to your teacher. And I really liked Joe's face when you were expressing your point of view. He was really not convinced. not that I would know what it is to become a teacher, but I felt something in that way so strongly when I left my parents' house, when I broke up with my ex-boyfriend. Because it was stop living with my parents made me feel like I would stop being their child. But in a way you have to say no so you could say yes. But I also understand that you were actually saying yes, in a way that you were still serving your teacher by being the way you are or teaching the way you teach. And in a way, you're not teaching the way your teacher teaches. So it's completely different from what I've never been with Gen Roshi, but from what I've heard, it seems very different. And I just wanted to thank you for sharing this because it was really touching.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I saw an email pass at some point yesterday and I forgot, someone was asking a question. Oh yes, about the evening sitting in Portugal. Are you doing it or not? Someone wanted to log into it yesterday and didn't know what the link was, or no one was there or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we're doing it 8:30 Lisbon time. It's the same link as this one.
Okay. Exactly. Maybe she had the wrong time. Okay.
8:30 Lisbon time. If you are in a different time zone, you have to find it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good afternoon. See you in a few hours again.